I want to see science serve a useful purpose to improve the standard of living for all people.
Hey, why is anyone fighting food advance? A very small percentage of the world's population is fortunate enough to have the luxury of turning down food.
We've arranged a society based on science and technology in which nobody understands anything about science and technology.
You can't build a peaceful world on empty stomachs and human misery.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Biotech Podcast. It's the weekly biotechnology podcast that's not just about biotechnology. Providing information to help you change hearts and minds. Moving innovations to application with communication.
Welcome to the Talking Biotech Podcast. It's the weekly podcast about medicine and agriculture with an emphasis on biotechnology and the good things it can do for people and the planet. My name's Kevin Fulta, and this week we're going to be talking about barley. Now, barley has a lot of roles for us in different capacities, but one of the experts on barley is Dr. Sheila Adamargono, who's currently in Cologne, Germany, where I was 2 weeks ago and wish we could have done this in person, but we had technical issues. But she's an independent research consultant and does other work in research as well. So welcome to the podcast, Sheila.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today.
It's really great because I know you from Twitter and I really enjoy your feed and was really excited that we could talk about barley because this is a topic that I teach about in our plant domestication course and really wanted to have you on to talk to an expert. So really great to have you on today. So,
oh, thank you again. Very kind of you to invite me.
Well, let's start out with some background. So what exactly is barley and why is it so important?
Technically, barley is just a grass, a member of a grass family. It's a hearty cereal. It has tillers, and its tillers bears a spike, which consists of spikelets or seeds. And from these seeds, we can get a heavenly drink, which is beer. Most people would say barley is important because it gives us beer and feed for animals. But I would say that barley is important because it has given us civilization. From math, written language, land administration and ownership, pregnancy tests even, measurement, which the U.S. user probably use it, which is an inch. And actually, if one wants to understand politics and monetary, start from the beginning, and that would be barley, domestication. So I would say it's very important. So
I don't think that you can leave that out there without me touching on it. So how is barley related to pregnancy tests?
Well, actually, during the Egyptian time, I think around 3000 BC or 4000 BC, they used wheat seeds and barley seeds as a pregnancy test as to indicate the sex even of the baby. So they would ask a pregnant woman to urinate on wheat seeds and barley seeds. 3 days or 7 days later, if wheat seeds germinated, that would be a girl. And if barley seeds germinated, that would be a boy even. And that work, it has been retested again in 1960s, and that has 70% accuracy. I think that would be impressive.
It has 70% accuracy?
Yes.
So do you have 50% accuracy just by chance? Or?
Yeah, probably, but I'm still impressed, but I just like, how on earth could you possibly, you know, think that to use this as a barley seeds and wheat seeds as a pregnancy test? So I just thought it's like, okay, we are on to something here.
Well, I don't know. I've urinated on barley and wheat seeds before, and both of them germinate, and I haven't had any children yet. So, you know, I've never been pregnant, so the I'm a really good negative control.
For sure. But I would actually argue from genetics and dormancy point of view, the wheat and barley seeds from 4,000, 7,000 years ago are not likely to be similar with the barley seeds and wheat seeds we currently have. So that would be an argument for me.
So in defense of ancient pregnancy tests, I'll give you that one. Okay, so so much of their ancient function probably ties in with origin. So where did barley originate?
It originated actually from Fertile Crescent, and that which is modern day Israel, Jordan, Iran, and Iraq, even up to Turkey, and it extends into Central Asia. And that's present-day Kyrgyzstan, Afghanistan, and western of Pakistan.
Okay, so the Fertile Crescent. Is there a place on the Earth called the Infertile Crescent? Like Antarctica or something?
Probably, yes. They should have used this one, the barley, for the infertility test on this one, probably.
You know, this is good. I'm glad we finally connected, because at least we're having some fun. So it's originated in the Fertile Crescent. And so what do we know about diversity of barley around the world? And are there ways that we can think of it in different classes, or is it really just very monolithic genetically?
It is monolithic in terms like it has one genome only. It's not like wheat, which you have like four or two different kind of genomes and copies even. Barley is not that complicated, but barley genome is very big. It's about 5.1 gigabase pairs. It's, I think, about almost 2.5 the size of human genome. I'm not a human geneticist, so I'm not entirely sure. I think it's, how big is the human genome? 2.3?
No, you got it right. Yeah, humans are about, I think I usually go with the number of 3. Gigabases, but so you're looking at, you know, pretty much almost twice the human genome size, and that's just for the haploid genome, right? I mean, you're talking about this being a polyploid, but this is an allopolyploid.
No, barley is diploid.
Okay, so barley is a simple diploid. Okay, very good. What are the trends we've seen about where barley is grown and how it's farmed?
Barley is requires a bit of fertilization. So you need a bit winter, and they also require a switch from short to long day. So that would mean from the around the Tropic of Cancer and Tropic of Capricorn. So that region.
Okay, so pretty
above equator.
Yeah, so pretty far north and south in order to get the appropriate photoperiod and chilling required in order to make it do what it does, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so when barley was domesticated, are there any interesting stories or any interesting things that you could talk about its radiation into the diversity we see today?
Yes, it's what most people or what we tend to forget is that all cultigens plants we have, they all suffer seriously from domestication syndrome, which means they have been selected based on simple traits, which ancient farmers think that they were favorable. Scientifically, we would call them favorable, but colloquially, we would probably say laziness and easiness, you know, just simple traits which make their life easier. So in barley case, it started with one gene only, which is the brittleness gene. The wild barley, they're all brittle. But the cultivated one, for some reasons, they have a mutation, and the barley seeds, the barley spikes are no longer brittle. So the seed stays on the spike. And this would technically doom the plant, reduce the efficiency of the seed dispersal, but we took it to our advantage. And which means it's easier instead of collecting all the fallen seeds on the ground, the ancient farmers just cut the plants. It's easier. So that requires considerably less amount of work. And another thing, which is just human got lucky, basically, is that wild barley is a two-row spike. It has two rows. But then they undergo mutations, which all of a sudden they turn into six rows. So it's basically triple the yield. which is also, again, something, oh, this is very favorable for human. Another trait which is less feasible is that the naked and non-naked seeds. Wild barley has a very thick seed coat, very woody and very hard. But then, for some reason, it undergone a mutation and it turned into naked seeds without any seed coat, which make it very easier to handle and faster to grind. So they make bread out of it. So yeah, those kind of things which you could group it without using genetics. But these days, with the knowledge of molecular markers, we can actually classify them better using the genetic knowledge, using the genetic markers. And we can study them using the allelic diversity and haplotype, and we can group them accordingly based on their allelic heterogeneity and diversity.
Well, really, the big three things that look like the separation points are the ability to not be brittle, or the shatterproof type of phenotype, and then the two rows turning into six rows, and then also this naked seed. So what's really cool about that is that it's a lot of the same kinds of traits that have been identified in other grains as favorable. So let's follow up on that on the other side of the break. This is the Talking Biotech Podcast, and we're talking with Dr. Sheila Adamargono, who is a private consultant or a research consultant that works with barley. And we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, Talking Biotechers. Episode 140 is important in that it emphasizes the importance of critically analyzing something very important, our own opinions. We form opinions and thoughts from the evidence we deem credible. Sadly, that tends to be the evidence that's already accepted from people we relate to, the folks in our trusted communities. You sometimes hear social scientists think of them as tribes. But in episode 140, I talked to Mark Linus about his new book, Seeds of Science. Now, Mark was not certain about technology to the point where he participated in actively stopping it. To his credit, he stepped back, looked at the data, and changed his mind. The good news is that he sees technology with great nuance. He's no fan of companies and not even the rabid tech supporters, but he's a fan of technology that can help people or a planet. And this is the challenge to you. Listen to the podcast and challenge what you believe. Ask yourself honestly, what would it take to change my mind? And if confronted with that evidence, would I have the courage to change it? We live in strange times. I mean, the good news is that the way forward is easy. It's the truth. We need to test ourselves, challenge others, share beautiful stories, read Seeds of Science, critically evaluate Linus's claims, and share your thoughts on his thinking. The bottom line is that we have to constantly test ourselves for self-delusion and ensure that we are objectively thinking about data. Don't be anti-GMO, pro-GMO, be pro-science. Get excited about rigorous tests of claims and share that information. And read Mark's book, and for what it's worth, I bought mine online and not being paid off by Big Linus. I just thought that I appreciated his sophisticated discussion of a topic that is immediately polarizing and polluted by mistrust. If we can talk to each other and, well, talk to ourselves about challenging our beliefs, maybe that's the best way to have a productive discussion and get this technology out to those who can benefit from it.
And welcome back to the Talking Biotech Podcast. Today we're talking about barley, its domestication, and what it's used for. Some of the interesting stories that go along with barley as it being used as a pregnancy test. we're talking with Dr. Sheila Adamargono, and we're covering some of the domestication traits that people found important before they could make things like beer or bread. So we're talking about this shatterproof or this brittleness. In my class, I always teach that this was identified in two different places at the same time, or more potentially. What do you know about that particular trait?
We know so far from the genetic evidence is that barley from fertile crescent has been domesticated twice independently. And one is on the western side from the Fertile Crescent, and the second one is about 1,500 to 3,000 kilometers farther east. And what we know is that from the western part, that contributed mostly to the diversity of European and American cultivars. And the second domestication on the east side of the Fertile Crescent, that is contribute a lot to the diversity of barley in Central Asia and the Far East. And with a more recent finding from around 2012, I think, some might even argue that barley was probably domesticated three times, and the third time would be in the Tibetan Plateau. And basically, there goes your theory of the center of origins, you know, when one plant comes actually from one point, one place only. But this is not the case with barley. It comes from everywhere, basically. We cannot really pinpoint where it comes from. So,
well, this is one of the points about barley that is similar with other grains like sorghum and others. Really is interesting to me is that early domesticators, so early, scientists, but probably farmers who are looking carefully at the crop, identified traits that they really liked. And in this case, that brittleness trait or shatterproof trait. And it turns out that in most grains, they identified these different centers of domestication because they select for the same trait in different places, so that different farmers in different places find this brittleness gene, or the lack of a functional brittleness gene, a benefit. And so what they find is that now you have seed that stays on the plant and has to be threshed rather than picked up off the ground, and you have better yields. But it's really fascinating, because what it really tells us is that there's these multiple places of domestication, but the same gene is affected just with different mutations. It's pretty cool.
Yes, and we keep thinking from the plant aspects, but perhaps also should think that everywhere across the world, human is the same in terms of, if it is my day, I would do it. So I will choose go. I will take that choice. I will choose something which is easier, which is more beneficial for me. And that happens to be, you know, security of the availability of the seed.
Yes.
Apparently. So that's probably more it.
So laziness is the main driver of domestication events.
Exactly. laziness and easiness. I think that's, if you would like to invent something, I think go in that direction. Would this be, you know, improve the laziness and easiness? If it's yes, I think you're going to hit the jackpot.
Yeah. So, well, I guess just that there may be a lot of farmers that object to the idea. They may go, well, we prefer ease of harvest. It's maybe a more judicious way of explaining.
Yes. Well, you will have to find a much better, probably, a marketer or someone who can really say it in a nicer way, but basically, this is how it goes.
So. Sure, no, I understand. The other big tie-in with barley domestication that's been hotly debated among scholars has been, was it domesticated because of its use in breads, or, you know, like in this kind of baking, or was it domesticated because when you fermented it in a big vat with water, the germinated seeds, that it made a liquid that made you feel funny when you drank it? So was it beer or bread?
Beer. For sure it's beer. It was very early that it was bread, but I believe the reasoning was that there was not enough oven for bread yet at this point. And what they found is one of the earliest pots that they found barley traces, malt traces. And so I believe it's for beer. Also, because I do not think that they made a special pot for brewing, for malting barley, but I think they also found this barley in the pot, in the jar, by accident. Because probably one of the guys was too busy with something, and he forgot to cover the pots, and there was the barley storage, and it got rain, and he was too afraid probably to tell the wife or rest of the colony, and he just covered it up with things. And then 3 days later, oh, I have to do something, and I will just say, let's just take a risk and drink it. And apparently everyone like him better now. So I think that's how it all started. We forgot that most ancient farmers are probably just as social and as practical as we are now. So, you know, just how to handle things socially rather than plan things. A lot of serendipity and accidents mainly. That, I guess, is how we get here. So
Okay. So the stories of barley are not just about laziness. They're also about carelessness and covering up your mistakes.
That would be my guess. So,
well, you know, history's full of that stuff. But one of the things that I've seen are artworks by the Sumerians. So, you know, another ancient people of that region who were seated around large vases, drinking liquid apparently out of a large vase with a straw. Is this kind of tied in with perhaps fermentation of barley?
Yes, it's very likely. But what might have happened is that they also found a beer recipe from the Sumerian people, and they try it. It's not exactly the same barley like what we knew now with full fermentation, but it's more like a mix of soaked barley and they grind it. So I'm not so sure it's straw, but I think it's more like a stick or spoon when you have to stir the mixture every now and then, because otherwise it will go into sedimentation. But it's more like soft seed barley, and you can just smash them further to get more sugary substance out of it. So
okay. So maybe here's another good question about the uses. Is we talked about beer and breads and things like that, but what are some other uses that have historically been there for barley that may have been part of their domestication story?
Beer for sure, and bread, and it's nowadays our feed, animal feed. Barley has been very popular, I think, for thousands of years, from the Egyptian, Sumerian, the Romans, but for some reason, all of a sudden, it's getting into old-fashioned, and it's got transitioned into animal feed. Even at one point, it was punishment. It really was going down from the foot of the Roman gods, of the gladiators, into the punishment of gladiators. So that's kind of a bit sad story. But most of the time now is actually for animal feed, and this is one of the main reasons why I'm a bit nervous with the barley industry, because it's been going down, reduced in terms of growth in the past, I think, 5 years or 7 years, because most farmers will go for a more expensive crops, which are more than just animal feed. So that's one of them.
But at the same time, we also are seeing this big resurgence in interest, at least in the States and North America, around beer and different kinds of beer made from different barleys. And are there potential opportunities for barley breeders to be creating those markets?
Yes and no. The malt itself, I think they probably keep looking at into the higher yield and stability of the alpha amylase. Malt industry, because it's full of chemistry, these people are very strict with any kind of changes in taste and substance. The requirement for malt barley, which is going to be processed in a bigger industry, which is beer, malting industry, they are very strict with any kind of chemical changes. So, and there's hardly not so much room of changes in terms of certain components from the yield, constituents itself. So I don't think there will be a lot of space left for the breeders to change the barley seed composition with regard to malt. But, however, we are all now suffering from the climate change, and it looks like that we are going to suffer, everyone, from yield reduction. What I can better imagine now is that when the wheat yield is reduced and the number of malt that has to be fed is increasing, it's not the same, something has to take over wheat, And I'll see actually now the coming back of barley, not as animal feed, but as human feed. Whether they are now already busy making barley flour for bread and pasta. So I think there will be more possibility for barley breeder to play around in that direction than changing the malting taste. Those guys are very strict in the industry, I'm sorry to say.
So. No, that's good, though. But so what about the issue of biofortification? We've seen with other grains the introduction of genes for, say, beta carotene or other nutrients that are missing inherently from those grains. What's happening in barley in that particular area?
Yeah, is this one of the odd thing in barley as compared to wheat? Is that for some reason, with the classic genetic transformation with Agrobacterium, it is not exactly feasible to do transformation in barley. There is only one cultivar in barley, which is Golden Promise, which can be transformed with 25% success rate. And this is very odd because Golden Promise is a direct gamma ray mutation from Mitorp, an older line, and Gamma Torp, you just cannot transform it. And until today, we cannot find another kind of barley cultivars that would be willing to be transformed. So I guess our limitation is set by the plant, by the genome itself. But I do think that because of the availability of new biotechnology like CRISPR or RNA silencing, I think those technology would be a much better use and can find definitely will be used in barley breeding rather than the transformation, the classic transformation.
Well, you mentioned the barley genome, and what did we learn from sequencing the barley genome? Was there anything really outstanding that helped us understand anything about its domestication or its unique properties?
Yes, the domestication and barley genomes and genetics in general is very complicated. Much more complicated than we could ever imagine. Well, in barley, it is very challenging, though. Not only that the genome itself is big, but mainly because it contains about 80 to 85% young DNA full of repeats. And until today, we have actually no idea what they actually do. That's one thing to interpret the data. We just don't know what they do. They are just there.
Yeah.
Second is that the ordering of the genes is not so easy as one would think. If you sequence then, the genome, then you know the order. And that's not the case because the young DNA, they are short, so it's impossible to order short sequences. And because it's gene A, young DNA, gene B. So, but the problem is because you cannot know, there is no standard fixed connection within the young DNA, it is not possible to order gene A and gene B accurately. So we know the DNA for sure, we know the sequences, but ordering it into a workable high confidential map, the genomic sequence map, physical map, it is not, we are not that far ahead yet. I think we will need probably another like 5 more years for that. And that is actually, yeah, that makes the breeding more complicated than we actually thought. And another is that we've now sequenced the cultivated barley, the Elite Line, Morex, this is the American barley, and the wild barley. Is that what happened, what we noticed is that wild barley, it contains a lot of lethal alleles, deleterious alleles. And that's actually, we have always, a lot of breeders, including me, and we always think if we cross back to wild barley, we will enrich the genome. There will be a higher degree of genetic diversity. But what we forgot, which is a good lesson now, is that once you cross back with the wild barley, you also include back a lot of unfavorable, even deleterious allele. Consequently, if the progeny have these genes, the lethal genes, the proteins can be lethal. So it's okay, it's something that, you know, we should talk about this earlier. And what we also noticed that so far, we thought we have many genomes, many genes for breeding and domestication, but actually, we're actually a bit fixed all only around domestication syndrome genes. And one of those things is that a lot of genomic regions, they are actually not accessible for recombination at all. So we always thought we will just find new genes, we will find new QTLs, we will find new regions. But with the information we got so far from the new sequencing data, our options or for breeding sources is not unlimited. There is a serious limitation to this. And it means that, okay, now what with these limitations? How far can we go? And how are we going to deal with the limit? Because all biological thing is a subject to limit, but in the breeding, we always have every year, I would like to have 1.5% increase in yield. And it's been going up steady, but there will be a limit. And hopefully there, yeah, what are we going to do with that? That's really something that, yeah, we're all now going to wonder, how are we going to improve breeding if we are limited in our sources of variation? And this will be like probably the subject and the challenging questions in the next years, I would think.
Well, to me, I'm going to interpret this as an existential threat towards beer.
Yes.
And I'm going to call for a wide-scale investment of resources into barley research. Well, maybe this is a good point. Maybe barley is the poster child for where we need better gene editing, because we know lots about different we know a lot about different traits in different grains, and they seem to translate well between grains. And so is this just a case where barley, if it was transformable, could be probably one of the best candidates for substantial remodeling by gene editing techniques?
Yes, that's for sure. You would probably can, because of the limitations of the genetic variations we have, well, it's not that limited yet, but with the genetic editing, that would be, well, then all of a sudden we will have more choices, and that would be great, I think.
Well, that sounds really good. More choices are always better, and better barley is, you know, better for everybody, I think.
Yes, definitely.
Well, so let's, if people wanted to find you on social media, where would they look? Tell us all about your Twitter account.
I'm on Twitter. My handle is Seminicia. I'm not always good with short stories, so I'm also on Facebook. And I have this page. Trust me, I'm a seed scientist, and you can find me there and post questions there. There are a lot of pre-breeders, breeder scientists, and seed people on those pages, and sometimes they have better answers than me. So come and have a look, I would say.
No, very good. So that's on Trust Me, I'm a Seed Scientist on Facebook, and Seminicia.
Seminicia. It's like Seminis.
Yeah.
With IA at the end.
Oh, Seminicia.
Yes.
All right. Seminisia. Okay.
Yes.
Very good. And I'll put those links on the website itself. So, Dr. Sheila Adamagono, thank you so much for joining me and sharing what you know about barley. I had a lot of fun with this one, so thank you.
Thank you so much for having me again.
No, very good. And thank you very much to the listeners. Thank you, as usual, for listening. And, of course, write a review and refer a friend. And broadcast it on Twitter and other scientific places where you might find a broader audience for us, so we can share more science with more people. Thank you very much for listening to the Talking Biotech Podcast. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Biotech Podcast. Send your suggestions for guests, comments, or questions to talkingbiotech@gmail.com. Please write a review of this podcast on iTunes and recommend it to a friend. More downloads help us reach a wider audience with science.